13-20-86-CV in the interest of JMM, a child.
May it please the court. The question in this case is whether a party may fundamentally change the nature of the relief requested without filing a written amendment to the pleadings. As the Supreme Court explained in City of Fort Worth versus Zimlick, a trial amendment must be filed as a written pleading. An oral statement at trial is insufficient to modify the pleadings. On the day of trial in this case, Marlene asserted family violence and sought sole managing conservatorship for the first time. But she never filed the trial amendment that she recognized was required. Courts have held that it is error to grant a parent sole managing conservatorship and other relief in the absence of pleadings to support it. And I would point the court to our reply brief at pages 4-5, including the Baltzer versus Medina case out of the 14th Court of Appeals and the Binder versus Joe case out of the First Court of Appeals. And these pleading rules are not just procedural niceties. They ensure due process. And the process that was due was fair notice pleadings and a statement in the petition in a suit affecting the parent-child relationship regarding the action that the court is requested to take regarding the child and the statutory grounds as required by Family Code Section 102.008B10.
Mrs. Meredith, I have two questions. One is because I can't recall this morning whether at the time that the request was made, and this was a bench trial, of course, was there a request by your client for a continuance once the request was made to the court? And I can't remember.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe there was. And admittedly, there was no objection at trial to this purported trial amendment. But we did in a bench trial. It is more flexible on, you know, bringing issues to the court's attention. And we did so in a motion to modify the judgment. And that was made before the trial court actually made findings of fact and conclusions of law. And we pointed out this error. But so we preserve the issue and appellee doesn't argue otherwise.
Okay, so that doesn't waive any argument, the lack of continuance or the lack of objection being made at the bench trial.
Correct, Your Honor, and appellee doesn't argue otherwise. I think that issue is you know, any issue to the contrary is waived.
All right, but and let me get to the second part because I couldn't remember, to be perfectly honest. The other part I had was, when we argue about fair notice, as you were just beginning to argue, wasn't there already discussion among the parties about this domestic violence issue, even though it might have not been in the actual pleadings?
Your Honor, it never came up in discovery, and Marlene does not counter that and admitted that in her when she was on the stand. If you look at the transcript at page 164, that Marlene never raised this in discovery. So this was a true, trial by ambush. And this came up at the last minute and it was never, you know, never raised in the pleadings, never raised in discovery. And in a normal case, if there were family violence, the parties, it would have been all over the pleadings. It would have been the basis for relief. And that was simply not the case. And both parties, as of the day of trial, were seeking joint managing conservatorship. And in fact, Marlene's Exhibit 1 was a statement of the relief she requested, and that was joint managing conservatorship. But as a last minute trial strategy, counsel for Marlene raised the specter of family violence for the first time and noted correctly that a trial amendment would be necessary, but never.
But isn't it true that you did? Were you the trial counsel, Ms. Parenti?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, but didn't trial counsel bring up in her opening statement family violence?
Your Honor, trial counsel for appellant brought up Marlene's history of instability and history of making unfounded allegations. I will point you to the transcript at pages 8 through 9, and you can see where it was discussed. She raises the issue in the context of having a pattern of false allegations against people and the fact that Marlene made a police report but then retracted it. So it came up in that context, in that, you know, here, the whole trial at this point, both parties are requesting joint managing conservatorship. So the trial, the focus of trial for both parties up until the change was which parent should have the right to designate the primary residence of the child. And so Brandon's entire case was focused on him being the more stable parent, able to care for their child. And that is all of his witnesses and everything was geared towards that. And so merely bringing up Marlene's history of instability and making false allegations did not inject that. And in fact, we did object to it in our motion to modify. And that was with plenty of opportunity for the trial court to correct this error. I mean, and Marlene admits it's, I mean, this is a fundamental shift. And when you're switching from joint, which is presumed under the family code, to sole, you have to have a pleading and a basis for that. And the family code recognizes that in section 102.008B10 by requiring you to have a statement in your petition in a suit affecting the parent-child relationship saying, here's the action I want you to take, court, regarding the child, and here's the statutory grounds. You don't necessarily have to cite the statute, you just have to provide the grounds. And here, if Marlene was arguing she should get sole managing conservatorship, she would have had to give a basis, and that would have had, she would have had to raise the specter, at least, of family violence. So she recognizes that a trial amendment is necessary for this fundamental shift, never does it, never follows through. We objected timely. Marlene doesn't challenge that. And I want to, you know, just underscore that adhering, these aren't just, you know, procedural rules that are nice. It is especially important when one's constitutional rights as a parent are at stake. And the Supreme Court of Texas recently explained that a parent may be denied the fundamental liberty interest in parenting only after they've been provided due process and due course of law. And that is not in our briefs, but I will give you the site. That is interest of NG 577 Southwest 3rd 230. And that's a parental termination case, but the court recently also underscored that's no less true in a child custody case. And the case I would point to is In Re CJC at 603 Southwest 3rd 804. So
is Parenti, I want to go back because I'm trying to get the procedural history correct. You indicated a few moments ago that the appellee at the point that made the argument that they were switching gears and no longer doing joint but sole would require a trial amendment. Was there ever an actual written trial amendment submitted to the trial court?
No. That is the fundamental problem.
All right. And did the trial court make a ruling like granting a motion for leave to make that trial amendment?
No, Your Honor. The court said nothing about it. The Marlene did not obtain a ruling on that. It may be implied in the court's judgment that it effectively granted the motion because it granted sole managing conservatorship and awarded other relief. So it the court is definitely granting relief that was never pleaded, and it was never, although the trial amendment issue was correctly raised by Marlene's counsel, there was no follow through even after.
Well, that was my point, that now we have a judgment of which there's no pleading to support. If I understand the procedural history of the case.
Correct.
So we have a judgment that's making a finding of domestic violence, even though there's no pleading in support of that.
Correct. And those cases at pages 4 through 5 address that specifically, both in the context of awarding sole managing conservatorship instead of joint, the Baltzer case and the Binder case, as well as other relief that's not, you know, other relief that's not requested or, you know, pleaded and it's granted, that's error. So you have to have, it's the foundation of a pleading before you can grant relief. And especially when someone's constitutional rights are at stake as a parent, and your right to co-parent your child and to raise your child needs to be grounded in notice. I mean, if you're going to shift that presumption in favor of joint managing conservatorship, you need a pleading and you need evidence, and you need, it can't just be a last minute gotcha. And it's not the case, as Marlene suggests, that the family code provisions on family violence somehow trump these pleading rules. The section 153.004B, which addresses family violence, has to be read in conjunction with the Constitution, the pleading rules, and the rest of the family code. And the family code underscores this pleading requirement by requiring a petition in a SAPSR to have a statement regarding the relief the court is requested to take regarding the child and the statutory grounds. So it is, you can't just, if Marlene's reading of the statute were correct, that would incentivize parties to wait till the last minute to drop the bomb of family violence and therefore sanction trial by ambush. That just can't be the case when, you know, someone's constitutional rights as a parent, their future employment opportunities are jeopardized when you have the specter of family violence just, you know, dropped into the middle of a trial, and relief being awarded without a pleading to support it. It's just fundamentally improper. And the remedy here is what we've requested, is to modify the judgment, and it is proper for this court to strike the offending provisions that are not based on pleadings. And that is the Mitchell versus LaFlamme case I cited in our brief, that you can reverse and render judgment and delete the offending provisions that are not supported by the pleadings.
Counselor, does the Medina or Binder opinions that you talked about earlier, do they address what remedy is available in these situations?
They don't address specifically, as I recall, the remedy and a motion to, when we have a motion to modify the judgment based on that, they reverse and render that it was error to grant a father sole managing conservatorship when he never requested the relief in the petition. That's the Baltzer case. The same thing happened in the Binder case. Sole managing conservatorship was raised. And but the Mitchell case discusses not in the context of sole managing conservatorship, but just the proper procedure when you have relief that is unsupported by the pleadings, that it's appropriate to strike that. And that is what happened. And it's just a matter of, this is a cleanup matter. This was a case where, and I see I'm out of time.
That's fine. Is there any further questions? I was letting you finish your thought, Ms. Brandy.
I just had one more question. It's the same, on the same issue. So I was just kind of looking at the remedies, and I was wondering why, you know, you were requesting a modification rather than a reverse render. And I see what you're saying. I just was looking for some precedent on that.
Well, I think it's both a reverse and render judgment, that the judgment should be modified as follows, to strike those provisions.
But wouldn't it be a reverse and remand? That, you know, I was listening to y'all on this issue, and wouldn't it be a the judgment is invalid because if you're correct, Mrs. Perrin, and the court hasn't decided that, that the judgment is void because it asked for it's granting relief not requested.
Your Honor, I think that would be appropriate as well. Our request of relief of simply modifying is more of a, it's appropriate one, and two, it's a matter of judicial efficiency, and that it's within this court's power to do that as the Mitchell case did. So either
here's
way-
here's my problem with that, Ms. Ferentes, and I know we're out of time, but the court will take note that this is an important issue because it is a parent-child relationship and it's a domestic violence finding by the trial court. The appellate court, in order to take a finding away, is difficult in from an appellate review, because it's taking away a factual finding that we are not being asked to review. It would be different if the appeal was before us, that the court had insufficient evidence to make this finding, and then we could review it on a factual finding. But to reverse and render and modify a factual finding by the court on an appellate review is complicated and difficult.
Your Honor, I understand your point. I would point you to our opening brief, where we are challenging those findings too, because if you recognize that it's important to have a written pleading to support relief and findings, there is no legally sufficient evidence to support the court's finding, because there's, as a matter of law, it's not properly before the court, that issue. So I think that you can reach it that way. And we have challenged those findings, but this is an abuse of discretion review, and it's sort of all folded into one issue where, you know, that the insufficiency of the evidence is definitely part of that. And I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal, unless the court has anything further now.
Anything further, Justice Longoria?
No, thank you.
All right, Ms. Allen, we will put your 20 clocks on the time. If you get a hot bench and we ask you a whole time, rest assured you, we will let you go past 20 minutes.
I understand.
You may proceed, Ms. Allen, with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. First of all, I would like to address a couple of small points that were raised before I forget them. Ms. Parenti referenced the potential harm to Mr. Montgomery regarding employment based on the findings in this case. There's a case they cite in their brief that talks about that as a possibility, but that case is distinguishable because that case is one where someone specifically received a family violence protective order. And that's not the situation here. So that's not, while this order is a matter of public record, in a family violence protective order, your name is put into a database. And that's not the situation with this order here. Second, they referenced that family violence hadn't been raised in discovery, or that my client hadn't indicated family violence in discovery. But in fact, when you look at the record, family violence was not asked about by Mr. Montgomery in his discovery. And so that question, if that question was not asked, then there was no way for my client to answer it.
Would you agree though with Ms. Parenti that there's no pleading request at any time in this case asking for a sole managing conservator based on domestic violence?
So there is no written pleading, and I will concede that point. However, it's my position that that is not a successful argument for two reasons. First of all, we did make the oral trial amendment, and that was tried by consent. That was never objected to up until even the court made its ruling. That no time between when I made the oral trial amendment at the very beginning of the trial, all the way up until the court made its ruling, did Mr. Montgomery object to that trial amendment. Now, so that's one part of it. On the other part of it, Judge, I would argue that even if we fail on that issue and the court can't support the judgment on that issue, I believe that you still can affirm the judgment. It's my position that even if both parties walk into court and have pled and argue for joint managing conservatorship, if there is a significant history of family violence in the 2 years preceding the case or during the pendency of the case, and that is proven and that evidence is presented to the court, as happened here, let's not forget, there were many significant issues involving family violence that are clear throughout the record in this case. And so it's our position that if that were to happen, then the court would be within its right to disregard either party's pleadings and make a finding for sole managing conservatorship based on that family violence evidence.
Okay, so I want to address, go ahead, Justice Lundberg, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Ms. Allen, at what point in time, just to clarify my memory, did you make that oral amendment? Was it during your opening? Was it during the evidentiary phase of the trial?
It was at the very beginning. I believe it was during my opening. Mr. Montgomery was the petitioner in the case. And so he and his attorney had made his opening. They actually did mention the family violence in their opening. And then when I made my opening was when I brought the issue of the family violence to the court's attention, and that it would require an ultimate change in the outcome.
Okay, so I have two questions based on the argument that you made that that a written pleading is not necessary. And I think that one goes to Rule 67. When everybody kind of tries the issue by agreement, even though no one's pled it and no one's objecting to it. But even in that circumstance, at some point there has to be a pleading made of the trial amendment. I mean, we've all tried cases sometimes where by agreement gets tried where there's the issue is not raised in the pleading, but don't you believe that under Rule 67 that still requires an amendment at one point?
Potentially, yes. And so that may be a ground for the court to find on that particular issue. But like I said, I think that we still have the other possibility for the court to affirm the ruling.
Okay, so the second point that you're making to this court is that because we're dealing in this issue, that the trial court has this authority to go outside of the pleadings and make a finding that isn't in anybody's pleadings. I mean, it could have been that neither party asked for a family violence, but the judge finds it and makes that finding. My question to you, is there any case law to support that the trial court can go outside of the pleadings in order to decide a case on a family law matter?
I would disagree with Your Honor that it's the court going outside of the pleadings. It's our position, the pleadings ask the court to make a finding regarding conservatorship. It's our position, conservatorship is the issue. When you look at conservatorship, there is, as family lawyers, we're familiar with the Holly v. Adams case and the best interest factors that courts have propounded regarding what's in the best interest of the child. One of those issues is family violence. So all of that relates to the issue of conservatorship itself. There's not one list of factors for sole managing conservatorship and a separate list of factors for joint managing conservatorship.
I understand that. Does that include that the trial court can make a finding of domestic violence under that conservatorship argument? And is there any case law out there where a trial court has done so and an appellate court has said it's okay?
Judge, I haven't been able to find any. I've looked. To the best of my ability, I've tried to find
something. I was just hoping that someone out there had decided this view.
Right. I would love to be able to bring a case to you that says that somebody's already done this. But I do believe that the entire issue is conservatorship.
Right.
And so the court has the ability to make that decision.
But Ms. Allen, I mean, would you agree that it's a completely different case? As a family law lawyer, you know, this is a completely different case that was being tried once you changed that conservatorship issue. I mean, it's... The other side can very well argue they were surprised.
I actually don't agree with that, Judge, for very many reasons. First of all, Mr. Montgomery, going into the case, knew the best interest factors that I referenced. He knew that family violence was on that list, even if you're just talking about the parties being joint managing conservatorship or conservators. Family violence is part of that list. It is something that the court can consider and can address. Mr. Montgomery had a witness there who was a previous girlfriend who testified about the issue of family violence and their relationship. And so even though I did not make the trial amendment until my opening statement, he already had witnesses there to testify for him on that issue. He had the opportunity to ask about it in discovery. For whatever reason, they didn't. I don't know why. That's typically a question that does get asked. In this particular case, it did not get asked. And then there was an issue involving arrest. So it was kind of a he said, she said situation. There was actually an arrest where Mr. Montgomery was arrested based on an incident with my client. And so that's an event that he knew about and would have been aware of. And so it's our position that there is no surprise. That issue is already an issue before the court that has to be dealt with. If I can, I'll gather my thoughts unless there's other questions and figure out where we need to go from here. Just to address, kind of go back and cover a couple of things. First of all, both parties did have pleadings on file requesting the court to make a decision regarding conservatorship. So we believe that that was covered. Um, 153.004 is the section that I primarily rely on in my argument and in my brief. And I would just point out that in that particular section, it requires the court to take certain actions upon a finding of family violence, but there's no reference to a pleading requirement in that particular section.
Are we talking about 153.004B?
B, but then also, or I'm sorry, A, well, kind of the whole thing talks about it, but A is where it says the court shall consider evidence of intentional use of physical, of abusive physical force. And then B, the court may not appoint joint managing conservators if credible evidence is presented. And then D actually kind of goes into the next part. And because Ms. Pretty has some time reserved, I want to go ahead and address kind of the second part of their brief so that I've got my say on it. In D, it talks about if there is a finding of family violence, what provisions the court can make regarding visitation. And in this case, what the court did was order that the exchange of the child take place at a supervised visitation facility. And so they argue that converts this facility into a child care facility. And it's our position that that's not the case, obviously. I find it interesting that appellant is arguing about the one provision that gives him unsupervised possession with his child. And so if that provision of the order is overturned, the next logical step would be to look at it. And as far as 153.004D says, there is no visitation. But what the trial court in this case did is she considered the situation of the parties. There, in addition to the family violence that happened while the parties were together, there was also evidence of multiple instances of issues that happened specifically at exchanges after the parties were separated. And so based on that, the court ordered the exchange to take place at a supervised visitation facility. And so D1...
Here's my question, Ms. Allen, to you. The issue becomes under the Family Code 153B is that it's mandatory language that once the trial court finds a pattern, history or pattern of past or present child neglect or domestic violence, it prohibits the court from appointing the parties as joint managing conservatory. So my question though, then this finding of the court will not allow this father to have joint managing conservator of a child that's very young, so that this finding has long-term and permanent effects. So my question is twofold. One, can that ever be removed by the trial court and in the future under a modification allow a joint managing conservator? Because we're talking of a child under the age of two in this circumstance. And second, because it has that mandatory language, does really the discretion of the argument under your conservative issue fall that you early argued?
So to answer your first question first, yes, I believe that that mandatory language requires the court to make that finding no matter what the pleadings say. Regarding a future modification, there's two things I want to say to that. So first, yes, I think that if there had been a material and substantial change at some point in the future and it was in the best interest of the child, the court could modify that and change it and appoint the parties as joint managing conservators. Something, and I apologize because I don't have the case handy and I don't remember if I cited it in my brief, but there is a case that says that just because the court has to appoint one person as a sole managing conservator, they actually can appoint the person who committed the violence as the sole managing conservator. So just because the court made that finding, they could have still ruled that Mr. Montgomery should have been the sole managing conservator. Now, that didn't happen here, and we believe that that was the right outcome. But all it says is that they can't be joint managing conservators at that point. It doesn't say who has to be the sole managing conservator.
Could you maybe give us that case in a little letter brief, just a letter to the
absolutely.
Court?
I will. I know exactly where it is. I just cannot remember what it is, but I will. That's absolutely.
That's fine. Just within... Justice Benavides, how many days?
We'll give her 5 days.
No problem.
Provided just a letter. Don't have to be a brief.
If I could, just to clarify, my understanding was the mandatory language of you cannot have joint managing conservators required a pattern of family violence within a 2-year period, correct?
2 years preceding or during the pendency of the case.
Okay, so then... 2 years from now, if someone were to follow the order, then and they didn't go to the same place and there was no history of violence, then in any modification, there wouldn't be a requirement if they didn't find, I mean, if 2 years had passed, there wouldn't be a requirement that they could not be joint managing conservators. Is that correct?
If you had a situation where there had been no family violence in that time period, then I do believe that this particular section would not apply.
It still could, but it wouldn't be required.
Right. Right. The only other thing that I'll cover quickly, assuming there aren't any other questions, Texas Family Code section 153.014 specifically authorizes counties to establish a visitation center or a visitation exchange facility. So the type of facility that appellant complains about is specifically authorized in the code. And so we believe that this is appropriate. The court went to great lengths to provide a protective setting for exchange while also allowing the father to have standard visitation. I mean, he has as much visitation as he would have, even if he were a joint managing conservator in a traditional, quote unquote, traditional order. It's just that the exchanges have to take place in this protected setting in order to give my client the protection that she's entitled to.
But I mean, I do have a question on that because I'm assuming appellant's concern is the safety of the child and the ability of the facility to take care of the child during those 15 minutes when a very young child is alone. How do you respond to that? Because this facility does not comply with that.
I would point out, like I said, that these types of facilities are specifically authorized in the family code. And if you look, so if we alter the situation just a little bit and say that father were getting supervised possession at the facility, there would still be a time where the child is not in the care of a parent. There is the parents in those situations never, they're designed so that the parents do not interact with each other. The child is never handed from one parent to the other parent. And so there is always going to be some amount of time where the child's going to be in the care of the facility. And So therefore, I believe that that situation is, it is anticipated and addressed in what the legislature has said in the family code in allowing counties to set up these types of facilities.
Is that the only facility available in that county?
Yes, currently that is the only one that we have. Okay. If there are no other questions, I'll return a whole 2 minutes.
I don't think we do. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Allen. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, am I back? Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted
Ms. Parenti, I want to start with the argument that is being made by the appellee that under the trial court's authority or power or whatever verb we want to use under trying to ascertain the conservatorship of this child, that within that he has or she has the authority to make this finding, whether there's a pleading specifically as to domestic violence.
Your Honor, that provision, 153.004B, does not trump the pleading requirements, both that are...
I understand that, but let's in this circumstance, I'm assuming that both parties prayed for conservatorship of this child, you know, one having sold, the other one having sold, or having... whatever conservatorship that they are requesting this trial judge to find, if the trial court found within that trial that there was a domestic violence, even if both parties hadn't pled it, if they hadn't argued it, doesn't the trial court have the authority in order to protect the child or be in the best interest of the child to make that finding and protect that child?
Your Honor, I think this provision has to be read in connection with not only the Constitution, but the other provisions of the Family Code, which do require a pleading. And counsel for Marlene does not address that at all. Section 102.008B10 does require a pleading. So if family violence had never arisen before the trial and happened to come up during the course of the trial, the proper thing to do, as Marlene's counsel recognized at the time, would be to amend your pleadings. And as Your Honor, Justice Benavides pointed out, at some point you need a written pleading. And that's what the Family Code requires. That's what the rules of civil procedure require. And that's what due process requires at some point. And that's what the Texas Supreme Court says in City of Fort Worth versus Zimlick. An oral amendment at trial is insufficient to modify the pleading. So at some point it was required to fundamentally change. And I think as Justice Longoria pointed out, this fundamentally changed the nature of the case. Both parents sought joint. The only question was which parent could determine the primary residence of the child. So in that case, they're seeking the same thing. They're seeking to co-parent this child. And then you switch to seeking sole at the last minute and then never supply the written pleading. That is just, it's improper. And other courts have recognized that is the case, both in the context of sole versus joint managing conservatorship, as well as other unpleaded relief. It needs to be in the pleadings at some point. And if this had come up and the trial court recognized the shift, it should have said, counsel, especially when this was raised, we raised this in a motion, you know, a post-judgment motion to modify. And we said, look, there's no pleading.
Can I interrupt real fast? The timer is not going on. Kathy, can you turn the timer on? Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, okay. I recognized that about a minute in and I started the timer. So
oh, thank you. And I'm happy to stop whenever you like. I do want to point out
hold a few on, things. Ms. Bridget, Justice Dickinina, I'm going to make you timer. You let us know when we're at 2 minutes.
You went about 2 minutes before the timer, before I started the timer. So,
judges, I can review on the YouTube as well, and I'll correct it here in a minute.
Thank you,
Ms. Mills. Go ahead, Ms. Parenti.
All right. A few things I think it's important to point out. Counsel for Marlene says that Marlene was never asked about family violence in discovery. That's actually nowhere in the record. I've never seen the discovery in this case. request. It's just not in the record. So that's not something that this court can consider whether or not she was asked about. She actually admits in the in her testimony that she didn't respond. She didn't raise family violence before trial. So the other thing is counsel for the first time argues that this issue was tried by consent. That issue is waived. She did not raise that in her appellee's brief. And we pointed that out in the reply that she's not arguing this was tried by consent. We did object at an appropriate time that gave the trial court the opportunity to correct this error. And neither the court corrected it or and Marlene did not supply that trial amendment when we pointed it out. So that's just at some point you have to have a written pleading. That's especially important in the context of shifting from joint managing conservatorship to sole. And it's just error to allow the judgment to go forward without, especially this is, as one of your honors pointed out, this is important to, you know, in the life of this child, it's important to the parents. And to have it sprung at the last minute is just simply not consistent with the rules. It's not consistent with the family code either. So the discussion about the family violence provisions needs to be read in connection with that family code's pleading requirement. So it is got to be read together. The issue about whether Brandon was aware of all of this before and had a witness to testify on family violence. Actually, the witness focus was on Brandon was a good parent. And based on this last minute shift in trial strategy, Brandon's counsel asked her, have you ever known Brandon to be abusive to anyone? And she said no. So it wasn't a witness on family violence. It was just a question to a former girlfriend of Brandon as to whether she had ever known of any such thing. Because at this point,
was there any testimony regarding the incident in question that was discussed in the brief, like the police report, the police called, or any of that testimony?
There is testimony on that, and it's in connection with Marlene's retraction of her statement to the police in that incident. And that is in the record. It's one of the exhibits we cited in our brief where Marlene retracts her statement to the police in writing. And so the problem is it was unpleaded. So family violence and the shift as a result of this new allegation to shift to sole was improper because it just wasn't supported in the pleadings. And at some point you do have to correct that. One other thing I would note is that this, just very quickly, the exchange of the child at the supervised visitation center only applies when Brandon is dropping off the child in Brazos County. It doesn't apply to any other drop-offs. Those occur either at the child's school or in a safe exchange zone at a police department. So this is not like the only option the court had to require the child to be unsupervised at a facility that is not licensed to take care of a child unsupervised. It's a supervised visitation center. So I just think that is important. The trial court could have crafted different relief if it believed it was necessary, but the bottom line is there's no pleading. And without a pleading, you cannot shift this case so fundamentally to change the parental rights of a parent. And I believe my time is up now, unless the court has further questions.
Anything further? I think we've had enough. We've got it, counsels. All right. Anything further from Justice Hitting or Justice Longoria?
No.
Then this case would be under submission.